Just got a new puppy or kitten. Congrats. But also, yikes. Between crates, beds, toys, treats, and those first few vet visits, you've probably already dropped a small fortune. Which is where Lemonade Pet Insurance comes in. It helps cover vet costs so you can focus on what's best for your new pet. The coverage is customizable, sign-up is quick and easy, and your claims are handled in as little as 3 seconds. Pro tip, Lemonade offers a package specifically for puppies and kittens. Get a quote at lemonade.com/pet. Your future self will thank you. Your pet won't. They don't know what insurance is.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Ah, DSW, Earth Place of the Humble Brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
And welcome back. It is Hardline. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go here on News Radio 930 WBEN. And we have on the phone from Business Insider, Buffalo's own Dave Leventhal. Dave, good morning.
Great to be with you. Go Bills. Hope you're having a good day.
Yeah, go Bills indeed, let me tell you. To not go too far off on the Bills game to start things off, but it seems like we usually do. Brian and Susan were talking about on Friday how they're kind of looking past this. They have Miami. I don't know. I don't think there's anyone you want to look past. Right now you're in first place. You should take every game as seriously as, hey, we win, we're still in first place.
I mean, the football gods giveth and the football gods taketh away, and we've seen that in very stark fashion over the past 3 weeks, especially when we were sitting not so prettily at 6-3. So 9-3 is great, but 9-4 would not be so great, and also give entree to other teams like Kansas City and whatnot. So yeah, I don't think any Bills player right now is being a observer of this team very acutely is looking past the Jets, who are of course very dangerous and have a have a little skin on their wall too that maybe red, white, and blue Zubas striped, if you get my drift.
Yeah, hey, they beat us at MetLife. Let's make sure we take care of business here in New York, and in the real New York, by the way, so we can look forward to that Saturday night national game next week. Now, Dave, obviously a lot going on here in the sports world, but as always, a lot going on in D.C., and the news of the week out of D.C. seems to be the prison swap for Brittany Griner that the U.S. made with Russia. What are the details of this, and how is it being received in D.C.?
Well, very few people who I've talked to about this are unhappy. I mean, it's great when any American who is in captivity and they're so wrongfully, especially in a country like Russia, is being returned to the United States and has been right now. She flew into Texas, San Antonio, and is back on U.S. soil. So as a result, that's great. But obviously, it raises a whole host of other issues that have been articulated in various forms and fashions about, for example, others, Americans who are in Russian prisons right now or serving time there unfairly. What's going to happen to them? And also to the very notion of doing deals with Russia at a time when we are actively supplying Ukraine to defend itself against Russia and are at pretty much the nadir of our relationship with Russia on an international relations level, at least since the Cold War, and arguably, the latter stages of the Cold War were warmer than things are today with the United States. You think back to the 80s when Ronald Reagan and Mikhail Gorbachev were having their summits and whatnot. Well, that's Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin are not hanging out today. So it's a really awkward, fascinating, tragic, and and curious situation all wrapped up in one. And you better believe that here in Washington, D.C., this has been the talk of the town.
Now, Dave, you know, Brittany Griner was over there for a marijuana-related charge. The United States make the prison swap to get her back home. But it does kind of put the spotlight on the fact that marijuana federally is still a crime, is still against the law in the United States. Has anyone brought that up?
Yeah, well, you know, first, just fundamentally, she was there on basically trumped up charges about marijuana possession, which may or may not have even been true. And we are swapping a prisoner who is a notorious arms dealer. So if there's some debate and some concern about the appropriateness of it, it is very much centered on that in essence, we're taking somebody who is a hardened criminal who can very much do great harm in swapping them for somebody who, is not at all. Should we be giving up somebody like that and sending them back into Russia where they could do, you know, potentially great evil? You be the judge as to whether that's an appropriate thing or not. But the issue of marijuana, I mean, on one hand, here in the United States, it's like, okay, well, you walk through Washington, D.C., and I mean, people are smoking pot on their porch, walking down the street. It's no big deal. The cops are not coming by. And that's the case in many places across the country. But yet at the same time, too, there's this hodgepodge, patchwork quilt of rules and regulations and laws that make it okay sometimes and not okay other times. It's very state-based. And it really underscores, too, that, you know, states and the federal government are just completely not in concert on this, and that there's no standard really at any level. So states do have a lot of power. So does the federal government. And there's a great deal of tension as to ultimately where this is all going to land. It's a situation, as we well know, that is very quickly evolving, very fluid, and still for people, you know, who possess marijuana, there's a lot of care that needs to be taken and to the, you know, locality as to ultimately what is going to be considered legal and not. Even airports, I've seen, you know, plenty of examples of, you know, where there's amnesty boxes where it's like, all right, you can't take your weed on the plane, but it's okay if you have it right now and you can put it in this box here so you don't get yourself in trouble. A lot of people think that there should be a very better way.
You spoke of the prisoner that was swapped for Brittany Griner. What can you tell us about him? How long was he in American prisons, and was he set to be released in the future? What was his crime, and was it a lifelong sentence before the swap?
Yeah, so to your latter question first, no, he was not going to otherwise be released. I can't tell you off the top of my head exactly how long he was in there for, but, I mean, this is somebody who, again, was a notorious arms dealer, was in a great deal of trouble, and was a person of great interest to the United States, but also great interest to Russia, and they wanted him back. So, you know, this is probably not the last time we're going to be having a discussion about prisoner swaps with Russia, or for that matter, other countries too that may see this as an opportunity to get what they would consider to be a political prisoner back from the United States, and there are plenty of countries in South America, Iran, other people who we might not be playing nicely with, or other countries that may see this as an opportunity to open up channels of diplomatic conversation, if you will, about whether there is some, United States citizen, American citizen in one of their prisons who might be interested in getting back in exchange for something else.
Now, Dave, we looked to the Senate, and we had a Senate runoff on Tuesday. Was the talk of the political world. Senator Raphael Warnock was reelected in the runoff, but was it just me, or was that closer than some people were expecting on Tuesday?
It was close. I mean, of course, we knew it was going to be close just by virtue of the results of the general election, which were just a little bit more than a percentage point separating Herschel Walker, the Republican, from Raphael Warnock, the incumbent Democratic senator. So, you know, and it ended up a little bit wider than what had happened during the general election in the runoff. But I don't think anyone was really expecting that there was going to be, you know, on one hand, a 5 or 6 percentage point difference, and Raphael Warnock was going to run away with it. We knew that this was going to be tight. And, you know, the big question is the people who voted in the general election, were they going to vote again? And also, too, were there new people who didn't vote at all and were going to choose the runoff to vote? So ultimately, Raphael Warnock, he had a better turnout, get out the vote effort, and was able to, especially in his key areas where there were many more Democrats and Republicans, got them motivated and got them to the polls. When you look at the maps and in the voting trends, Herschel Walker didn't quite have that nearly as much in terms of getting out his base to go and vote. And that hurt him. And, you know, what also hurt him was just the fact that he had not been a very good candidate at times, you know, confusing answers to questions, you know, contradictions about what it was he would do or not do as a senator, definitely questions about his background, both in the business world and then, of course, the issue of abortion and whether he had paid or encouraged former lovers and girlfriends to abort their children. So, you know, we have a candidate who definitely has some baggage in Herschel Walker. And that was for, I think, at least some Republicans, including Republicans who were not supportive of Donald Trump and voted for, you know, Brian Kemp, the Republican governor, who was very anti-Trump in most ways. That just didn't sit well with them. And if you have an electorate, if you have a base that just isn't that excited about you, or at least part of that base, well, in a close race like this, Joe, that is going to be a deciding factor, and it very much was.
So how is Georgia viewed now? Is Georgia a purple state? Is Georgia a state leaning blue? Because, you know, Brian Kemp is very popular in Georgia, but if you look at their senators, they're Democrats. Right now, if you look at the state of Georgia, would you put it in the purple category?
Yeah, Joe, I would absolutely put it in the purple category, but with a big asterisk next to it, because there is a schism of sorts within the Republican Party in Georgia, and that's why you have Brian Kemp becoming governor again and getting reelected, in part because he appealed enough to all Republicans for them to go out and vote against Stacey Abrams, the Democratic candidate, who lost, this star, shining star for the Democrats, who lost two straight elections in a row and hasn't served in office in years now. So that was a huge blow to the Democratic Party. And Brian Kemp, a massive victory for him and for Republicans there. But, you know, all right, he wins the governorship. Why wouldn't Herschel Walker win? You know, you would think that, all right, if that's going to be the case, then it should be the case, too, with Herschel Walker. But it does go down to the candidate sometimes, and it goes down to what the candidate represents, how he or she is able to represent themselves on the campaign trail. And, you know, Raphael Warnock, too, he was an incumbent and was able to definitely leverage the power that you get from being an incumbent, whether it's financially or otherwise, to eke it out in the end, too. So the fact that a state like Georgia, similar to what you see in a couple of other states, it's rare, but it still happens. New Hampshire is a good example of where voters, there are enough independent voters, or there are enough Democrats or Republicans who are willing to entertain the other side and not just immediately default to the party that they would be inclined to vote for most of the time. You know, they're the X factor in all of this, and that's why you got different results and basically a split decision in Georgia, with Democrats winning one big race, Republicans winning another big race, and Herschel Walker. One has to wonder if it wasn't Herschel Walker running, but another Republican who was more like Brian Kemp. If Republicans would have won that seat, a lot of Republicans are asking themselves that question now. And I know that because I've talked to plenty of them, and they're scratching their heads saying, man, this was a missed opportunity.
So looking forward to 2024 and the state of Georgia, expect to see both parties put some money into that state?
You got to look at Georgia, I think, for the next several years at least, as one of the most important states, in the country for any statewide or national race. You know, we will see how the presidential election turns out. Is it going to be Donald Trump versus Joe Biden? Is Joe Biden not going to run? Is Donald Trump going to flame out and somebody else gets the nomination? I mean, lots and lots of intrigue that I trust we will be talking about for the next 2 years nonstop. But that all being said, you know, it's going to be a situation where Georgia, just because it is that tight, is going to be a focal point. Absolutely. In the general election, it's a true swing state, and one of the, you know, really only the handful of bona fide swing states that will be in play in a presidential election, regardless of who the candidates are. You know, most states in a presidential race and in this day and age are not swing states. We know who's going to win. It's going to be a Democrat or it's going to be a Republican. So it'll come down to that, you know, 8 or 10 or 12 or 15 states that are truly in play to determine who the next president of the United States is.
And so after Tuesday, Democrats had a 51-49 advantage until Friday morning, this morning, the morning that we're, the afternoon that we're recording this. Kristen Sinema says that she is now going to be an independent in the Senate. Dave, how did she come to this decision, and is it all that surprising?
I mean, on one hand, it was surprise. You wake up in the morning, and she's written an op-ed and released a video, and she's an independent now. I mean, it's also totally not surprising in the sense that she, over at least the past several years, has been willing really at any turn to go against her own party and, you know, not exactly side with Republicans, but also to, you know, was willing to really just kind of hold the Democratic agenda hostage in a major way for things that she might want for the state of Arizona, which she represents, or just some philosophical view that she had on any number of issues, you know, ranging from transportation to financial issues, and the list goes on. So she is staying within the Democratic caucus, and you can think of Bernie Sanders as a good analogy and analog for this, where he too is an independent, but he caucuses with the Democrats. So that means that the 51-49 split is more or less still the 51-49 split, but it also too means that, you know, there's going to be perhaps a little bit more onus on Kyrsten Sinema from her own standpoint to be provocative, to poke at Democrats, to split with them when they want. So not that she was ever a guaranteed vote for Democrats over the past several years, but that may be underscored and put in boldface a little bit more than even it was the past 2 years, which has been significant.
So, Dave, how will that go in 2024 as a independent? I would assume that the Democrats and the Republicans would put a candidate up so we could see a three-way Senate race?
Entirely possible, and at this point, entirely likely. So that's going to be one of the more, you know, curiouser Senate races of 2024, because it will be almost certainly, you know, if things hold, a three-way race. I can't see or imagine any scenario where Democrats or Republicans would just sit it out and not have a candidate up. Democrats are definitely not going to support Kyrsten Sinema since she just left the party. So, you know, you could have somebody like Ruben Gallego, you know, congressman, definitely any of, you know, several many Republicans who would vie for that Senate seat, including potentially, who knows, Carrie Lake, who just lost the governorship there. Definitely, you know, popular among many Republicans there and might want to try again for another office. So lots and lots of intrigue there. And one big question, though, is, you know, Kyrsten Sinema, is she going to lose all of her support? You know, who's going to fund her campaign? Are her donors going to bail out on her? Does she really have a constituency? And or is it going to be actually an advantage for her to, you know, split it up three ways where even if she wins 34% of the vote, well, it's going to be a little bit more than the other two win. So, yeah, lots of different ways that we can cut this, and the cutting pretty much starts now.
So beside Bernie Sanders, you know, I'm trying to think back of independent senators that ran successful campaigns. Who am I missing?
Well, I mean, there's a few in relatively recent history. Well, first of all, there's Angus King, who's a senator from the state of Maine, who is an independent, also caucuses with Democrats. There was Jim Jeffords from Vermont, you know, really, we're talking about 20-odd years ago. Joe Lieberman, senator from Connecticut, all different situations, but oftentimes they switch parties. You know, even Charlie Crist, the congressman turned gubernatorial candidate in Florida, he's been a Republican, an independent Democrat, you know, at different stages in his political career. And, you know, Lisa Murkowski in Alaska, who's still a senator, she ran as a write-in candidate and actually won one of her races in the past. And so there have been interesting stories like that. Again, all a little bit different and have their own complexities and complexions, but the Kyrsten Sinema race is probably going to immediately rise right to the top of the heap among the Senate races or congressional races of that sort, involving an independent or somebody running as sort of a third party type candidate. And yeah, there's going to be a heck of a lot of money in that race too, Joe.
If you're an experienced pet owner, you already know that having a pet is 25% belly rubs, 25% yelling, drop it, and 50% groaning at the bill from every pet visit, which is why Lemonade Pet Insurance is tailor-made for your pet and can save you up to 90% on vet bills. It can help cover checkups, emergencies, diagnostics, basically all the stuff that makes your bank account get nervous. Claims are filed super easily through the Lemonade app and half get settled instantly. Get a quote at lemonade.com/pet and they'll help cover the vet bill for whatever your pet swallowed after you yelled, drop it.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well. Hire high-quality pros at Angie.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1 million percent. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.
Coming to the end of the term for Congress, for Senate, you know, holiday break, the January 6th committee is wrapping up their work as well. And are we expecting anything out of them before they are no longer January 1st?
We absolutely are, Joe. And what we're expecting is two things in particular. Number one, that they are going to release a report, a written report. So if you remember back to, say, the 9/11 Commission, of course, it was a different kind of entity, bipartisan. This is, you know, nominally bipartisan, but not a commission. It's a committee. January 11th had a huge book that they basically published. We can expect something out of the 9/11 committee did. We can expect something out of the January 6th committee that's going to be akin to that, and that's going to be a written report, hopefully pretty readable, that's going to detail what their findings are, for better or for worse, whether you agree with them or not. There's also potentially going to be a final hearing that'll come Merry Christmas right before the holidays, and that's something, too, that will, of course, be of high intrigue. But the committee is going away. When Republicans take control of Congress in January, that's it. You know, fine, dunzo. And we're not going to be hearing about that committee anymore because it will not exist. So really, they've got their last, best and only opportunity to say sort of a final word on this before they close shop. And whether law enforcement investigations are informed by their findings or use their findings or take, you know, criminal referrals or whatnot and run with them, that remains to be seen. But yeah, the end is near and the end is coming.
You know, looking back on the January 6th committee, now, obviously, if you watch that, if you're from one side of the aisle, you think, oh, my gosh, people are hanging on to every word. I've got to tune into the network primetime. If you're on the other side of the aisle, you're like, this is just, you know, all political. This is. Have you talked to Republicans? You know, I had Chris Jacobs on when this was all being talked about. There was going to be a committee, and he voted for a committee so Republicans could select their members to the committee. Obviously, that didn't pass. Do you know if anyone's looking back on the Republican side and saying, you know, maybe we should have voted for this so we could have controlled who the Republican representatives were on this committee?
It's a mixed bag. And yeah, I have talked to Republicans, can't name names. A lot of these are off the record conversations, but, you know, who had sort of, for lack of a better term, buyer's remorse that they didn't, you know, ultimately give themselves an opportunity, their own party, to have representation beyond the two Republicans on the committee who were demonstrably anti-Donald Trump. So, you know, would the discourse been different? Would the questioning have been different? Would have the primetime events been less one-sided? Of course, it totally would have been a different thing. But the risk, of course, was that by doing so, by participating, by joining in on this, they would be in either tacitly or overtly supporting the notion of investigating Donald Trump and participating in what was a, you know, ultimately an effort to not just investigate January 6th and the root causes and the event itself, but as we all know, it very much was focused on the former president, the 45th president. So, you know, that was a very, very risky thing to do. And it was risky either way. Republicans made their choice. And I think really the biggest question, which you never can really quantify it, Joe, it's impossible to do so, but how much did the January 6th committee and the findings, the proceedings, the live television of it all, hurt other Republicans who were tethering themselves to Donald Trump during the midterm elections? Had that gone differently, had we not found out many of the things that ultimately we did about what Donald Trump did or did not do that day and leading up to that day, you know, would things have been different for somebody like a Herschel Walker? I don't know. I don't think anyone will know. But here in Washington, D.C., this is a topic of conversation. And continues to be a topic of conversation. And Republicans, I think, are having conversations actively about learning from that as we immediately go to the next election cycle, which, of course, will have a presidential candidate up on the top of the ticket.
And I got to ask that question another way as well, Dave. Democrats, you know, as you said, there were two Republicans on the committee, but Republicans that, number one, aren't too popular within the Republican Party and were very much anti the former president. Do you think there's any Democrats, or have you spoken to any Democrats that say, hey, you know, maybe we should have put a more popular Republican, given them access to the committee, so it's not viewed as this political hit piece?
Less Democrats feeling that way than Republicans probably feeling that they wish there were Republicans who were not Liz Cheney or Adam Kinzinger on the committee. You know, Democrats did pay a price, at least in small part. Elaine Luria, who's a congresswoman, Democratic congresswoman, she lost her election in a close race where her district was, you know, very, very, very purple. And even, you know, if you look at the numbers, leaned a little bit to the side of Republicans. So she's out of Congress. She's not coming back. And, you know, there's quite a strong possibility. Again, you can't quantify it or draw a direct line, but quite possible that her participation on that committee had an effect on her. But yeah, it's hard to say. You know, a lot of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning quarterbacking going on about how the committee actually worked out and who politically benefited from it. And then, of course, there's the argument that, well, look, everyone wants to look at this in partisan terms, but this was an effort, even if it was skewed toward Democrats, to get to the heart of what happened on one of the darkest days of America, where people died in the U.S. Capitol, was attacked and trashed inside. And, you know, I was there and I saw it with my own eyes. And it was as bleak a day as, you know, almost any day in American history, save for a few select ones.
Staying with Congress and talking about leadership, we saw the leadership votes 2 weeks ago, and we see Nancy Pelosi stepping down, obviously won't be the speaker as Republicans take over the Congress, but won't be in a leadership position at all. She is handing that over to Hakeem Jeffries. So Nancy Pelosi, for the next 2 years, will just be a congresswoman from California.
She will just be a congresswoman from California on one end, but of course she will just not be any congresswoman from California. I think the biggest question is she going to truly step away? Is she going to be sort of the, you know, the silent hand from behind the scenes, orchestrating things, being a puppet master? I mean, this is sort of the rumor mill chatter that we're hearing. And, I don't think anyone truly knows how this is going to go out. But one practical implication of all of this or one practical issue for Democrats to deal with and grapple with is that they're not in the majority. So it's not like they're going to have any great deal of power. Nancy Pelosi would not be Speaker of the House, as she noted. She would not have any, you know, massive ability to drive legislation or otherwise, you know, be the top person in the U.S. House. So as a result, it's more, you know, a curiosity. But one thing I will point out is that, and we reported on this in a 30-part series a couple of months ago called Red, White, and Gray at Insider, and the current Congress, we calculated, was the oldest Congress in U.S. history. No Congress has ever been older. The average age of a member of Congress, Senate, House, was in their early 60s. And many, many members of Congress were in their 70s or older, about one in four. And that number has actually dipped down with this new Congress coming in. The average age, median age, I should say, of a member of Congress is going to be 2.5 years younger than it was in this current Congress. And talking about Democratic leadership, well, Democrats and Nancy Pelosi acknowledge this, perhaps begrudgingly, that they needed a shift in generational shift. They needed to hand the keys to leadership over to a younger crowd. So you mentioned Hakeem Jeffries. The top three leaders of the Democrats are going to be in their early 50s, or in the case of Pete Aguilar of California, the number three Democrat, he's going to be in his early 40s. So there's a massive change in sort of this gerontocracy that we have in the United States, at least in this one example, where those who are in their 70s and 80s, and mind you, the top three Democratic leaders, Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, and Jim Clyburn, they were all in their early 80s. So that's a very distinct difference than, the leadership that we have today. And Republicans, too, are, you know, also going to be led by likely Kevin McCarthy, his speaker, who's in his 50s. It's going to be a different kind of Congress.
And I want to get to Kevin McCarthy, but I'm glad you brought up the red, white, and gray, because I was going to ask, as, you know, Democrats move away from Nancy Pelosi in leadership in the Congress, Charles Schumer is going to continue being the leader in the Senate. Were you surprised by that? And does this seem to be his last term as Senate leader?
Maybe, maybe not. Definitely, if he wants to stay, he's going to get reelected, and just did. So, you know, he's got, you know, many more years to go in his new term. But, you know, it definitely does underscore that gerontocracy is still very present, even if it has changed in certain aspects. And the presidential race will be, a referendum on whether we want leaders as president of the United States in their late 70s or early 80s for perpetuity, or a new generation to come in. But sticking with the Senate for a second, yes, Chuck Schumer will be majority leader again. But one interesting wrinkle, which kind of got, you know, didn't get a whole lot of headlines, may have not heard of it, is the Democrats, they will not have a speaker pro tem, which is somebody who is right at the top of the line to the presidency after the vice president in the House Speaker. Typically that goes to the most senior member of the majority party. Well, that would be Dianne Feinstein, who's 89 years old, and by all accounts, including, you know, multiple reports that we've made, is having difficulty with her job, is not understanding certain things that are going on, acting confused at times about her job and responsibilities. She is not going to be speaker pro tem. So that's breaking with a very, you know, notable tradition. It's going to go to Patty Murray, a senator from the state of Washington, who's in her early 70s, but, you know, somebody who's almost a full two decades younger than Dianne Feinstein would have been. So, you know, some interesting red, white, and gray gerontocracy related wrinkles, too, going on the Senate side.
And you mentioned Kevin McCarthy, the who's running for Speaker of the House. But it seems every time I bring up Kevin McCarthy, you've got people that, you know, are pushing back that this might not happen, that there might be some people breaking with the Republican Party and voting against him being the Speaker. Where we stand now, does it seem likely he's going to have the votes?
I mean, if you're going, you know, going to make an online bet or something about whether Kevin McCarthy is going to be speaker or not, I would have to say, at least at this point in time, and I reserve the right to change my mind two weeks from now, that you got to put your money on him being speaker. I think talking about practical implications, if he ultimately was not the speaker and Republicans revolted and tried to put somebody else to, the final vote, Democrats get to vote on who the speaker is too. And usually it's the party in power gets to pick the speaker because, well, in the end, they will have a unified vote. But this Congress, this House, even though it's led by Republicans, it's very tight. There's only a handful of votes or a handful of seats that separate Democrats from Republicans. So if you had, you know, say, just for the sake of argument, 20 defectors from the Republican Party vote for somebody else, well, I mean, you might be able to cobble together, you know, those Republicans voting for, I don't know, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And then the Democrats, left with the choice of Marjorie Taylor Greene and Kevin McCarthy, could in some kind of weird scenario vote for Marjorie Taylor Greene. Just say, all right, you know, you Republicans, you put the most extreme person up there possible. We're not in power anyway. Just go and burn yourself to the ground here. So, you know, we're starting to play some mental games here about how this would all work out, but it does definitely raise the curious possibility of there being some drama in regards to that too, Joe.
Dave, two more questions, and I appreciate you giving me the time today. Number one, Republicans taking over Congress. You know, Elon Musk has been releasing these, quote, Twitter files on Twitter. Is that going to get some attention in the new Congress starting in January?
Yeah, it might, depending on what they say. The first round was interesting, but not exactly explosive of a, you know, Watergate level or anything of that sort. So there are allegedly going to be or supposedly going to be more rounds of these coming out, Twitter release number two. And if there are prominent names mentioned, yes, that will definitely get attention. If there are shenanigans or illegality or untoward actions by members of Congress or political officials, governmental officials, or those in the political sphere writ large, then yeah, I suspect that there could be fallout from it. Think of the, you know, DNC email hack leak that happened in 2016, and there were reverberations from that lasted years and was highly embarrassing for the Democrats and for Hillary Clinton at the time too. So, depending on what is behind the curtain, that will really dictate the quality and the content of it as to, you know, ultimately what the meaning of it is.
And my final question, Dave, you know, you're a journalist, you've worked in the field. We heard about the New York Times union taking a 24-hour walkout. Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's pretty unprecedented, at least in modern history, at the level that it was at. It came, it passed, and the writers and those who were members of the union are back on the job. But it definitely underscores a deep, deep unrest internally at the New York Times and speaks to sort of a broader phenomenon in the industry where many news publications have unionized and engaged in collective bargaining with their news organization. And, you know, there have been so many layoffs and buyouts and even news organizations that have shut down or imploded over the past several years. And many of the workers for them are, you know, searching for some semblance of stability and job security. And without it are, you know, just afraid that the corporations that they work for are going to, you know, make their jobs go away or otherwise make their jobs untenable. So that too is a very fluid situation, which is playing out all over the country. And the Buffalo News is among the many publications, at least, you know, traditional newspaper publications that, are also grappling with this very issue.
Dave Levitt,
that Insider is a unionized publication as well. And, you know, we're having the same kinds of internal conversations as many publications are around the country.
Deputy Editor at Buffalo Insider, Dave Leventhal. Dave, thank you so much for the time. Go Bills.
Go Bills.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Making plans with asthma can be awful. It always goes from, that sounds fun, to, in this weather, what if my asthma acts up? I got tired of saying no. So my doctor suggested Dupixent. I'm Rachel, and I'm sponsored by Regeneron in Santa Fe to share my story with real patients like me.
Dupixent, dupilumab, is an add-on prescription maintenance treatment for adults and children 6 years and up with moderate to severe eosinophilic or oral steroid-dependent asthma that's not controlled with current asthma medicines. Dupixent is not for sudden breathing problems.
Dupixent helps people breathe better in as little as 2 weeks. And now I don't even think twice about saying yes to plans more, rain or shine.
Severe allergic reactions, including skin reactions, can occur. Get help right away for face, mouth, tongue, or throat swelling, wheezing, or trouble breathing. Tell your doctor right away of signs of inflamed blood vessels like rash, chest pain, worsening shortness of breath, brown or dark-colored urine, tingling or numbness in limbs. Tell your doctor of new or worsening skin symptoms, joint aches and pain, or a parasitic infection. Don't change or stop other treatments without talking to your doctor.
Do more with less asthma. Ask your asthma specialist about Dupixent by name. Visit Dupixent.com or call 1-844-DUPIXENT.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
When it comes to lighting, Graybar goes beyond parts and products. We help contractors turn plans into smart designs, manage kitting and deliverables, and navigate local codes so you can stay on time and on budget. Smart, scalable, job site ready. That's not just lighting. That's like kicking your project into Graybar mode. Yep, Graybar does that.